Hi, and welcome to Stroke Busters, a podcast presented by the Institute for Stroke and Cerebrovascular Disease at UT Health Houston. The purpose of this podcast is to bring you the latest news and discussion in stroke care, research, community, and academia. I'm Amy Quinn, Communications Director for the Stroke Institute, and your host for today's episode. May is Stroke Awareness Month, and we are excited to bring to you a mini-series this month focused on careers in stroke. Each episode, we'll talk with professionals, doctors, researchers, and therapists who work with stroke patients and in stroke science. By highlighting the people who work in stroke care, hear their stories, why they chose their career paths, hopefully this encourages you, future generations of stroke professionals. Our guest today is Emily Stevens, occupational therapist and researcher from the Stroke Institute here at UT Health Houston. We chatted about her career path decisions, what an occupational therapist does for stroke patients, and how she's using her knowledge and expertise to assist in stroke research. Let's get right to it. Enjoy. Hi, Emily. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm really excited to talk to you. You are our first stroke researcher that we're going to interview today. And the purpose is just to get an idea of your day-to-day, how you got started, why you're interested in this line of work, and, you know, what advice you can give to those who are looking to go into research. So let's just jump right into it. And if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and give us a little background.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Emily Stevens. I am an occupational therapist. I have been practicing as an OT for 6 years. On the clinical side of things. So I have experience in both inpatient and outpatient settings. Most of my experience has been in outpatient stroke and brain injury rehabilitation. I transitioned over into the role that I'm in as a research occupational therapist and a research coordinator just about 3 months ago. So I'm definitely still very new to the research world, but I'm learning all kinds of things every single day.
I'm sure. And so for those who are not aware, what is an occupational therapist?
So occupational therapist, that's really, I'm going to give you the umbrella answer and I'll tell you why. So occupational therapists work with people to help them live full, meaningful lives. And the reason that sounds so broad is because it is. You'll find occupational therapists working with people all the way from birth to end of life in all sorts of different settings, clinical settings, school settings, research settings, across multiple different diagnoses. You'll find us everywhere. So it is a very broad occupation.
And what do occupational therapists do in clinical stroke care?
So occupational therapists on the clinical stroke care side, we do thorough evaluations of our patients after they've had a stroke. It could be as early as acute care, or it could be all the way years after their stroke. We're looking at multiple things. We're looking at visual assessments, cognitive assessments, physical assessments, and we're looking at how their changes after they've had their stroke are impacting their function with everyday life. So we're looking specifically at how are they doing with their daily activities. This could be things around the house, simple self-care, working, driving, leisure activities, anything that they were doing prior to this injury. We want to know, are they able to get back to that? And if not, how can we help them get there?
Do you part-time as like a life coach as well?
There is a lot of love and education that goes into it, for sure.
I'm sure. So is there a lot of in-home rehab help that you're doing, or are they coming into the clinic? What's the best approach?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, and you're going to see both. You're going to see both after a stroke. Personally, I worked in outpatient, and I loved that setting because I had lots of resources available to me. I had technology that I wouldn't necessarily be able to use in the home, but that's not always available for everyone, whether it's means of travel, whether it's their insurance might not pay for that. There are multiple different reasons why you might see an occupational therapist go into someone's home, and they're going to be working on the same things, just with whatever resources they have available and can take with them into the person's home.
Yeah, I'm sure it's beneficial for everybody involved if you can get into the home and talk to the caregivers or see what hurdles they face on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. And another benefit of being able to have the therapist in the home is that they can look at safety concerns and they can give education on how to make adjustments to decrease fall risk. They can actually work on those functional tasks that we're looking at in occupational therapy in the natural environment versus in the outpatient setting. We can still do those things, but it's in a clinic type environment. We may have a kitchen, but it's not set up the same as your kitchen at home. Or we may practice in the bathroom, but it's not the same as your bathroom at home. So if we're not able to be in the home, we ask for lots of pictures, and sometimes we'll do video calls with family members who may be at home so that we can get a better idea of what their environment looks like and try to mimic that as much in the clinic setting.
Yeah, that actually segues into my next question, how much telemedicine has probably helped with occupational therapy?
It is definitely, it's definitely more available now with the pandemic, but I will say where I was working before on the clinical side, because of the severity of some of the deficits that we would see in our patients, we much preferred to be able to be with them directly, doing hands-on activities. But there is absolutely a role for telemedicine, and it's something that we're looking more into right now on the research side.
So what drove you to do occupational therapy in stroke care?
I actually, when I went back to school for occupational therapy, I thought I wanted to work with people who've had spinal cord injuries. And the reason for that is because my interest in undergrad was working on adaptations and modifications, and specifically leisure outlets. So I was very interested in adaptive sports. So I went into school thinking I'm gonna work with people who've had spinal cord injuries. I accepted my first position in a place where I could work with multiple different diagnoses, and that's where I really started to get experience with people who've had brain injuries and strokes. And from there, I just fell in love with working with this population. It's sometimes after a stroke, it can be like a puzzle piece because there are many different things that have been impacted, and it's you just really have to work with the patient, with the family, with anyone else who may be involved to try to fit those pieces together to figure out A, what do we really need to work on, and then B, how can we work on those areas.
How involved are you with the patient's team of doctors? So are you just working with them on certain things and hoping their outcomes are favorable, or is this a collaborative effort between their doctors?
It's absolutely collaborative. And I would say even past the doctors, we're working with everyone else on the team. Especially early on in the stages, so in acute care, inpatient rehab, you have direct access to the rest of the team. The physical medicine, rehabilitation physicians, neurologists, neurosurgeons, anyone else on the medical side of things, but you also have direct access to caseworkers, social workers, the other therapists on the therapy team, PTs, speech-language pathologists. Sometimes you'll find recreation therapists as well involved in those areas. On the outpatient side of things, we are still involved with them. It just gets a little bit more complicated because we're not in the same building. So the communication, sometimes it's email communication, sometimes we're calling physicians. It may be physicians that we get referrals from that we haven't worked with before, so we're trying to figure out what the best way to communicate with them is, but it's absolutely an ongoing open line of communication between occupational therapists and every other person who may be involved in our patient's care.
Yeah, I can imagine it's quite a unique experience. Someone has a heart attack, they go to their cardiologist. Mm-hmm. But after a stroke, there's so many things.
Right.
Every patient is different, so
yes.
It's a lot of good work y'all are doing. So why change from clinical care to a research-focused role?
That's a really good question. I was at a place in my clinical practice where I wanted to be able to do more than I could do. And I was very interested in growing as a clinician and being able to contribute more to the occupation and to my patients. One way that I was doing that before was through mentorship with new employees, mentorship with students. I worked with observers prior, but when this opportunity came up to transition into a research role, I looked at it as a different way to be able to contribute to improving upon the services that we're providing. We're just working on the science in a different way before it gets to the clinic.
So what's a day in the life of Emily Stevens, an occupational therapist who's doing research?
That is a loaded question. And the reason for that is because every single day is so different. I have multiple studies that I'm working on right now, as well as multiple projects that I'm trying to get started. So there's a lot of first screening for the studies that are active. So a lot of screening patient charts, following up on referrals that we've received, having meetings with patients who may be interested in participating in these trials that we have going on. And of course, everything that comes with those research trials, doing consent process. There are studies that I'm working on where I'm actually doing assessments or I'm doing intervention for the studies. So all of those different pieces of actually research activity. But aside from that, I'm also writing. So I'm writing other, working on writing other protocols. I'm adapting things that have been going on that we're trying to update. Lots of different things every day.
What would you say is the number one hurdle for a patient to want to join a research trial?
That's a really good question. I think it's going to depend on the trial. So if it's an acute trial, it may be that they're still grasping what has occurred to them medically, to their medical change. They're not really sure what their outcomes are going to look like. So they may just be apprehensive because everything is so overwhelming at that time. But further on, I can say some of the things that I've experienced thus far, and again, I'm very new on this side of things, but for some people it's been that they don't really have time for the follow-up appointments. They have so many other things going on that they just don't feel like it's going to work with their schedule. Or they may live further away than where the follow-up appointments are taking place. Or they may, you know, we're in the middle of the medical center. Traffic isn't great, and neither is parking. So for some people, that can be a deterrent as well. I have heard that one before too. Mm-hmm.
That is Houston, Texas Medical Center. It's like a second downtown. So what research are you involved in currently that you can talk about? What trials and studies are you doing?
Absolutely. So we have a few different studies going on that I'm involved in different capacities. One of them we're working on assessing feasibility and outcome measures in telerehab. So this is not just OT, but physical therapists, speech language pathologists, they've all been involved up until this point. It just kind of depends on who's available at what time. That's something that we have ongoing. We also have multiple studies that are addressing arm recovery after a stroke, which is something that, as an occupational therapist, I am very interested in. And they're very exciting trials looking at different types of technology that can be incorporated, and other studies that are going on in regards to arm function are looking at investigational devices and other assessment means to be able to determine where patients are starting at baseline and tracking their progression.
What is the most rewarding part of your job?
I really love to see the possibilities of what we can do to try to improve outcomes and improve the standard of care. On the clinical side of things, that's what we look at, right? We look at helping our patients get better and improving their quality of life and being able to help them engage in their daily life, do the things that they want to do, even if it looks a little bit different than how it did before their injury. And transitioning to the research side of things, I really get to see all of the exciting work that's being done that we will hopefully sooner than later be able to implement as part of standard of care practice.
That's one thing I've learned while being here. When you said standard of care, sometimes standard of care can be as mundane as being organized and detailed and looking for those little things, just better communication between other therapists and doctors, and it's all for that greater patient outcome. So that's great. I think being occupational therapist is, I mean, your focus is how can we improve, just steady improvement. What can future occupational therapists and researchers look forward to in stroke research that you kind of see coming up on the horizon?
The first thing that comes to my mind is technology. There is a lot of interesting work being done on with gamification, with robotics. Obviously, there are things that are already on the market, but some of these things are being used more frequently in assessment and intervention, post-stroke, trying to improve motor outcomes, and it's really interesting work, and I'm excited to see what happens over the next couple of years as these projects continue to build and grow.
Sure. And as we wrap up, what advice can you give for upcoming researchers, occupational therapists, anybody looking to take this career path?
So it's pretty funny because I think I would give the same advice to someone coming into research as I do and I have in the past to new therapists and students who are going to occupational therapy school. And that really is, you just have to be flexible and you have to go with the flow and be willing to say, hey, I don't know that, but I'm gonna figure it out. Just be patient with yourself to problem solve and to accept where you are, but be so ready to grow all the time.
And I'm sure also to remind yourself why you're doing it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Emily. I appreciate your time and your advice, and hopefully today we encourage someone to take a path down this stroke career path. And thank you again for joining us.
Thanks so much.
And that concludes this episode of Stroke Busters. I want to thank Emily for taking the time to talk to us today, share her story and experiences, and for her advice for future stroke care professionals. As always, ideas and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and are not a substitute for expert medical advice. Always contact your doctor before starting any program or therapy to make sure you are getting the best care tailored to your unique situation. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at UT Health Stroke to stay updated on upcoming episodes and share with colleagues, friends, and family. And don't forget to visit our website for more information on stroke prevention, research, training, community events, and more at uth.edu/stroke-institute. Until next time, take care of yourself and others.